Okay, we continue in the Rambam. We're in the third chapter. Hilchas Malvav Leiva Halacha Zayin. Now, we've been discussing how you can't just go into a person's house and take a mashkin, take a collateral after the loan is due. And even the Bezdin can't do that. And the difference between a Bezdin and a regular person. But there is someone that you can take a collateral from. In Halacha Zayin, we see Ha'orev, someone who's a guarantor on a loan. So he is already not involved because of his poverty. Okay, a person who borrows already is in a sad state. So because of his impoverished state, he has to borrow. So you have Rachmanis that when they can't pay, we don't have the lender come into his house and take a collateral. But a person who is just guaranteeing the loan is in a different situation. And therefore, Ha'orev Mutar L'mashkein Bizroa. The borrower, the lender, can forcibly take a collateral without even having to go to Bezdin. Likonis lebeso and enter the guarantor's house. Valito hamashkon, and he can take the collateral from the guarantor because the guarantor willingly obligated himself to pay if the borrower doesn't pay. And therefore, we don't have to have that much rachmanis on the fellow. Shinemar, the Torah says it very clearly. It says, Lekach Bigdo, you could take his garment, ki orev zor. He is a guarantor who's a stranger, meaning to say he's not the one, he's a stranger to the malva, to the lender that he didn't borrow from him. And as well, the truth of the matter is, the Gemara has, this is the pasuk the Rambam chooses, which is really a pasuk in Mishlei. However, the Gemara itself chooses a pasuk right out of the Torah. It says, "Lo savo al beso lavot." You don't go to the borrower's house to take a collateral. The Gemara learns you don't go to the borrower's house, but you could go to somebody else's house, like the one who made the guarantee. So, and the Gemara did not bring the pasuk from Mishlei. So, all right, so why the Rambam chose that is an interesting thing. Why he didn't bring that. Okay, but maybe he gives a little bit of a reason, because saying, ki orev zorhu, he's a stranger over here. So, interesting, the Rambam does bring a different pasuk in the Gemara. V'chein mi sheyesh lo sachar, what?
So, I mean, he guaranteed a stranger, but he would guarantee a friend.
No, he's a stranger to the borrower. In other words, there's no relationship between the borrower and the lender. He's a stranger to the lender. Even the borrower is not considered a stranger to the lender. He has a relationship with him. The guarantor has no real relationship. That's what he means in terms of being a zor. He's a stranger. He should not have guaranteed. No one guarantees. Well, when he guaranteed, he wasn't. Usually a person who can guarantee things has the money to do the guarantee. That's why you'll find the gemachs that loan people money, the Jewish gemachs, and they're looking for guarantors. They're not very happy to have rabbis be guarantors because the rabbi has rachmanis, he'll guarantee the loan, even though the rabbi's got no money to guarantee the loan. So they will not generally take from rabbis unless he's a wealthy rabbi. So in other words, a normal guarantor has the means to do this. And these loans are not for years and years. It's usually a short-term loans. Most loans are short-term loans. His whole life doesn't turn upside down in 30 days that he now is. And again, you volunteered for this. You did, nobody forced you. You did it out of the goodness of your heart. You had the money to cover it. So there's no reason we have to have rachmanis on you. Guarantee, a guy would say, I would not have loaned the money if you wouldn't guarantee it. So you guaranteed it. Don't guarantee it if you think you're in such a volatile position that in 30 days you're going to lose all your money. So when you made the commitment, it was a strong commitment. You're not the borrower who's coming to impoverish, says, listen, have rachmanis on me, I have no money, I have nothing to do. So the Torah has rachmanis on such a guy, but a guarantor, nobody asked you to be the white and shining armor that we have to have rachmanis on you now.
This object, Rabbi, that he can take, it doesn't have to be a designated object. He can take anything he wants.
Well, he would prefer cash. But if the guy doesn't want to give him cash, he could take whatever we've already learned in the past. You could take anything that will cover the loan. He could say, either give me something that will pay for it. He doesn't want to go into the guy's house. Right. He says, you're a guarantor, give me the money. Guess I'm not going to give you the money. No, give me some. I'm not giving you anything. Okay, then I'm going to go to my house and take, go to your house, take what I want. The guy can give him whatever he wants to give him, but if he's not giving him anything, then he can go into his house. That's how far it goes. Now, another interesting point is there's people who can owe you money, but they don't borrow money from you. Let's say somebody worked for a person, and now he wants to get paid, and the person doesn't have money to pay him. Bein schar malach, it doesn't matter if it's payment for work that he does, bein schar behemto, or if he rented his animal out to somebody who has to pay the rental, the kelov or utensils that he rented out, bein schar beis, whether he rented out his apartment or something. So all these things, this is not a classic loan. This is rather a rental fee that must be paid. Again, this is, again, you don't rent things if you don't have the money for it. This is different than you go to the guy and say, I don't have any money. Please have rachmanis on me. Lend me money. The guy's pressed to borrow the money is one thing. The Torah has compassion for the fellow. If you don't have money, what are you renting a car for? Walk, you know. You ask a guy to work for you and you don't have the money to pay him? That's already a whole different story. You can't start pleading poverty when you're using other people's stuff. If you're poor, you don't use other people's stuff. So in those situations, and the guy is not paying, you can again take the collateral when you want your money, and you don't have to go through the Bezdin. You go into the fellow's house, and you take the collateral as the wages should be. So again, the pasuk says you cannot go into his house to take a collateral. It's referring to the borrower's house, but you can go into other people's houses, such as the renter's house, that you may do. However, you got to be careful now. What if the guy who rented or had you work or whatever, and he owes you money for various rental, and the guy says, you know what, let's transfer this from being a rental owing to a loan. Okay, in other words, I owe you money, let's transfer it to a loan, and I'll pay you in 30 days. What if he changed the arrangement and made it, turned it from owing a rental to becoming a loan from the fellow? Asur, now you can't go into his house and you cannot collect the collateral because now you're collecting from a loan. Now you didn't have to do that. You could have said, sorry, I'm not, you gotta be careful now. People can be very unscrupulous within the letter of the law and take you for a ride. Then now the guy could know that he wants to, you know, borrow, he'll rent your fancy car, and then he says, sorry, I haven't got the money to do it. And he says, what's going on? He says, listen, all right, let's just turn it into a loan. And then when he turns to the loan, then you got problems. Because now it's considered a loan. The Torah says, ki sashe bereyacha mashas me'uma, if you owe to your friend any type of payment of loan, doesn't matter how it originated, if it originated as a loan or originated as something was converted into a loan, any type of loan, then all the halachas of a loan take place. So if you're working for them, you rent somebody, you'd be clever or wise to not let it turn into a loan unless you're prepared to lose all the ability to collect on that. Again, you can let Beis Din collect, but even Beis Din's power isn't that strong. They have to wait outside, or they can grab something that's outside from him, but you lose your power for that. Now, one more possibility. Let's say you've got the mashkin of the fellow, and you really don't want to keep the mashkin. You'd rather have some cash. You don't want the mashkin. Do you have any other possibilities over here? So he says in Halacha Ches, Mi shahoya biyado mashkin o shaloni. Let's say he's got a mashkin of the ani, and it's the type of the mashkin that he's not allowed to keep. Things he has to give back after a certain amount. Let's say it's something that he needs at night, so he can have it during the day, or the reverse. Now, if the guy's clever, im hoya schara yoyser al pasol, if the lender is capable of renting out the object during the time when he's allowed to hold it to somebody else and take money for the rental. And that rental will bring in more money than the depreciation of the object being used. So let's say if you rent, well, he says, let's say a hatchet or a saw, where you rent out a hatchet, let's say you get $5 a day to rent out a hatchet, and it's minimal depreciation on the hatchet, okay? So now what you're doing is you're paying off the loan by the money you get by renting it out to somebody. Hareza mutu laskiro. The lender is allowed to rent out the object during the period where he's allowed to hold on to it. He can continuously knock off the price of the debt as it's being rented out. And this is really a good thing to do. It's like returning a lost object. You don't even need permission from the owner. The lender might say, hey, I let you hold on to it. I don't want you to use to rent out the hatchet. He says, listen, this is the way we can pay off your loan. Well, this is ridiculous. Every day I give you back the hatchet. Let's say I'm renting it out at night. You know, the night workers, right? So I'm allowed to take the hatchet when you're finished working. So now I'm renting out the hatchet every night. I give back to you in the morning and over. So this could be maybe a third reason why a person would want to take it every day, because he could rent it on a daily basis and pay off the loan. Because what's the other going to say? Well, I don't want you using my hatchet. Well, you have a better way to pay off the loan, mister? And this, you don't need his permission. Because you already have, you're allowed to have it. And now it's interesting, you know, if he would use it and if he would have to be considered a rental, the Rambam doesn't discuss this. What if the lender himself uses the hatchet every day? Is he just holding on to it? The Rambam doesn't discuss that. But certainly he can rent it out to people and make some money for that.
And there's reference to depreciation. So if it does depreciate.
Well, if it depreciates more, then it doesn't make sense to do it.
No, but even if it depreciates a little.
Yeah, so it will make up the difference. So let's say the hatchet, you know, it can only depreciate so much. Let's say the hatchet is worth $50. So let's say every day he makes a dollar on the hatchet. And it loses a penny a day,
right?
So go figure out the math. How many days? But over a certain amount of time, that you will have profited $50 in rental versus depreciation, and now you're getting the $50 paid. You give him back the hatchet that's a bit worth less as a hatchet, but he's still getting a hatchet, and you can give him for that. Okay.
I said, Hashem, help me.
It's just a phase he's going through.
Let's continue. Let's continue in the Rambam, the fourth chapter. We now begin the discussion of ribis. Interest. Okay? So we'll take it very slowly. Very slowly. Okay. So Rambam starts off by telling us, Neshech u'marbis echadhu. There are two words the Torah uses. One is called neshech, which literally means biting. And the other word, Marbis, means an addition. Neshech is to bite. And marbis means to make an addition. Echaru, it's the same thing. We're going to see. It's one pasuk. It uses two clauses over here. And the point being is that it's saying one point. It's somebody lending money on the condition that he gets paid more than what he lent. Okay? Now, this is a negative commandment that you cannot lend in that way. We'll see all the negative commandments that are in there. Now, so what he's saying, that neshech, the term neshech, is the same meaning and the same prohibition as the term marbis. And marbis is neshech. Because when a person lends money with interest, it doesn't matter if it's money or if it's food, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're going to see there is Neshech in terms of the love, and marbis in terms of the malve. In other words, it's discussing it from two different ends of the coin. It's the same thing. In other words, when you lend money on interest, what you're doing is you're causing the borrower to take a bite. He gets bitten. He gets bitten by the interest, and it's no different than a snake bite. A snake bite, it bites you, it hurts initially, you may think it's nothing. But as the poison gets through the system, venom gets through. By the time you realize it, it's too late. And that's really what interest really does. It takes a bite out of you, and if you don't pay, the interest adds up. And all of a sudden you realize the mafia is there to cut your legs off before you can't pay off what you're owing. So that's the bite. So in other words, from the borrower's point of view, it's a bite. From the lender's point of view, it's an addition. Because he's going to be making additional money on this money that he's lending to the fellow. So when the Rambam is going to say, echad hu, he means say, it's really one mitzvahs lo saseh. It's not to be understood as two of the 613 lo saseh. It's one mitzvah of the Torah, although two expressions are used. And he's going to continue with this idea. Shenemar, it says in the Torah, Es kaspecho lo sitein lo b'neshech. You don't give your money to somebody with a bite. Uvamarbis lo siten ochlecha. And for an addition, don't give your food. That's in Parshas Bahar. Then later on, Ulahalon, later on at the end of Sefer Dvarim, Hu Omer it says, Neshech kesef, neshech ochel, a bite of money or a bite of food, Neshech kol devor, a bite of anything, Ashiyeshech, which you take a bite out of, you shall not do. So now, this is the point. V'loma nikr shmo neshech, why is it called a bite? Mivnei shu noshech, because it bites. Shemetzaras chaver, it causes pain to his friend, v'ochas v'sora, and eats up his flesh, as we already explained. V'loma chilkon hakosov, why is the Torah use two clauses? In other words, if it's one mitzvah, it's really one mitzvah's lo saseh, why is it written as two warnings? Which is, you don't give your money as a bite, and you don't increase the take on the money. So why laver lov b'shnei lavim? To show you how strict the Torah is about such an avera, that you have transgressed two lavim. There's two warnings. But still, in the number of mitzvahs, it's one mitzvah, not to be confused. In other words, it's of the 613 mitzvahs, it's only one, or an averus, whatever, it's one avera per se, to take interest, okay? Now, the Torah wants to show it, but it's a really terrible avera, so you're gonna transgress two lavim. It's an unusual situation, where it's two lavim on one mitzvah. You hear? In other words, it's you're causing, by me taking interest, I am getting extra money from this, which I shouldn't be doing, and at the same time, I'm biting you. So the Torah is saying, don't take extra money and don't bite a guy by doing one avera, which is lending money with interest. So it's a unique scenario. We'll see. But you transgress two lavim. In other words, they throw the book at you. You get a double sins, but it's still transgressing one mitzvah. Okay, one avera.
To be warned on both. Maybe because it's a both ends, though, because the borrower is doing an avera too.
No, that's a separate lav. That's a separate lav.
So,
okay. You can't. It says you shall not give. Ubamarvis, don't give your food, don't give your money, don't lend your money, don't lend your food, whatever, with using two different clauses.
You're gaining or you're giving?
And it doesn't matter. It's not really neshech is for money and marvis is for food. No, you see from the next clause, it doesn't matter. But it's a unique situation. You'll see later on in the Rambam how terrible this is. Okay? So it's just, we're warning him, he's doing terrible averis with this, and therefore we're throwing him a double warning, even though he's transgressed one of the negative mitzvahs of the Torah. It's a unique situation.
It's one action,
but there's two lavim he transgresses.
In that one action.
Thou shalt not. When you do one action, you have transgressed two thou shalt nots, but it's still one mitzvah of, you're not allowed to lend with interest.
Lo sase.
It's one real overall lo sase, not lending, but it has a double-edged head, two heads. So it gets two lavim. It's a very unique situation. And it's really telling, it's a terrible avera. That's the point he's saying.
And in that one action, you're causing harm to someone.
It'll probably be better if we read more and learn more and hear more things. We don't speculate. And the Rambam will give us more fodder to chew on. Okay? So now, but that's what he's saying at this point. Beis. Now, kederech sha'osur lahalvos, just like it's prohibited to lend money with interest, ken osur lilvos paribus. You can't borrow money with interest. Now, this is different than another avera of called onoa. We know it's a separate law. You're not allowed to cheat somebody in business. Now, when there's cheating, and let's say it's a clear evidence cheating. Let's say you know the guy needs something, and he you've got him. What do you call him?
By the short hairs.
By the short hairs. You know the guy. That's the last thing he needs. He needs to take a final exam. He doesn't want to fail the exam. So really, the thing costs you maybe $10. You're going to charge him $250 for it. And, you know, he doesn't have a choice. Whatever. $250. Now, that's clearly ono.
Yeah.
So now who's the... But the buyer is willing to pay the ono.
Yeah,
so there, the seller transgresses while the buyer doesn't. Even though you're being cheated, but
and you, it doesn't work that way, as we see in the halachas of Onah, which is not the case by interest. Even if you're willing, you're happy to pay the interest, it doesn't matter, it's naver, yeah. Shenemar, and how do we see this? Lo sashich le'ochicha. It says, you shall not cause your brother to bite you. It's the hefil expression. Can't cause your, the only way you can cause your brother to, now this is not the good old leaf ne'ivar leaf site michshol. The Torah is being clear and saying, thou shalt not cause your brother to lend, to bite you by lending with interest. That's only can happen if you borrow with interest. So we're doing it on both sides. Mipi Hashmua, the rabbis explain the pasuk. Lom de learn shesu asor love. This is a warning to the borrower. Klomar, to say lo sina sheikh lachicha. Don't make yourself biteable to your friend. Don't allow him to bite you. The only way he can bite you is if you borrow it with interest. Clearly what the Torah is saying. So we've got the lender has already got two lavim. The borrower has got one lav. We've got lots to add up here. Then there's a prohibition for people to be involved as intermediaries over here, as we'll see in a minute, who that's going to be. Let's say the sofer who's writing up the document, or witnesses, or the guy who brings the two guys together, whatever. Bain lo ma'avam ris. You can't be involved as an intermediary to bring the borrower and the lender together with interest. Anybody who has the following interest in putting these guys together transgresses. Or let's say he's a co-signer, he's a guarantor, o sofer, or the sofer, o aid, minimum, a witness, hareza overlo, so I say, they have transgressed another negative transgression, which says, lo sasimun olav neshech, you should not place before him a bite. Now look over here, sasimun is in the plural. So how could it be in the plural? The whole parsh of interest is written in the singular. If you, singular, shall lend money with money, interest, you're not allowed to take, be a biter. And here it says in the plural, you shall not place the interest, the bite, well, in the plural. So who, how could it be plural if it's only one guy lending? So is anyone else involved in enabling this to happen? Zuas, Horus, there's the warning. Af, even with, and in addition to the borrower and the lender, la'edim v'lervlos over to witnesses, to the guarantor, and to the sofer. Holomanato. So now let's get our calculators out here, and we're going to learn shamalva berivas, a person who lends with interest over al shishalav, will transgress six negative commandments if you lend money with interest. Number one, losia le kenosha, you shall not be like a nosha, you shall not be a biter for the fellow by no, I'm sorry, let me do that again. I said that wrong. Losia, you should not be an oppressor. Now, that is classically understood when you're collecting money from the guy who doesn't have the money to pay. That's what Torah says, shall be oppressor. But here, that is the original law. When it is, you lend the guy money, you don't press him to pay when you know he doesn't have the money. Well, guess what? When you lend with interest, you've created an oppressive terms of repayment of the loan. So you're supposed to lend a Jew for free. All right, by making interest, you are already being an oppressor to him. So we're going on the old law of oppressing someone on the payment of loan. It's creating an oppressive situation. So that's number one. Number two is kaspecha lo sitein lo banesha. We already listed that one. Your money you don't give as a bite. This is the point of lending. And the other one, the Ramarei brought, uba marbi sotinoch. Don't give your money to create an addition for you. Those are two we mentioned before. So it's two lavim that are at the point of lending. There's the old, well, really three. In other words, creating the whole concept of interest is oppressive, A. B, there's two lavim for the specific lending that's going on with interest. Number four, what about collecting it? Altikach me'ito neshev letarvis. Don't collect from him a bite or an addition. Five, lo sasimun lav neshev. You should not place upon the fellow a bite. Even though it refers to the people who assist, but if it refers to people who assist, certainly the guy who will lend will also apply to him. You've created a biting situation. And finally, don't put a stumbling block before the blind. Who is he placing the block in front of? The borrower, because the borrower is going to borrow with interest, and he will transgress as well. He could never do it if he didn't lend it to him with interest. 6 lavim you get for lending with interest.
Whoa.
It's not a lot that you could do something in one shot.
Just with the bugs. That's only certain, awesome. certain bugs.
Any loan you'll transgress 6 with interest, you'll transgress 6.
Whoa.
Yes, sir.
So if we were applying this, okay, if our institutions were operating this way, a savings account getting interest would be violated.
We have to go into all the details about non-Jews, corporations.
No, I'm saying, let's say we're a Jewish situation.
Then there's something called the Heter Iska. Right. So we have to get into all these things. We're just starting. But you have to keep all these things in mind. Now, so this comes out, the lender transgresses 6. Now, it's incredible because now let's add up all the averis that are included in everyone involved with this.
Way more than 6.
Now, Vahalova, how many does the borrower transgress? Well, he's off easy. Over Shtaim, he only transgresses 2.
Only 2.
Number one is, Lo Sashik Lachikha, don't enable your friend to take a bite out of you. And Velif Ne'eva, Lo Sitemir, so don't create a stumbling block in front of the blind, because by borrowing from him, now he can lend it to you. Now, Orev Eden goes, and what about the assist, people who assist, and the guarantor, the witnesses? Ain't over him, Ela Mishum, Lo Sisim. We only transgress 1. Don't allow that lav to happen. Don't place the interest bite that happens over here. Now, the question is, the commentaries discuss, what about not putting a stumbling block?
Yeah.
So the Rambam says, it could be, but not always has to be. In other words, by borrowers and lenders, it always is placing a stumbling block. Because either you borrow or you don't. Either you lend or you don't. But here it's possible the borrowing lenders could have gotten together without any helpers at all. So it's not always going to be that way. If they're not directly involved in making the loan happen, they could have done it without a sofer. It could have been verbal. You didn't need any guarantors. So it's not always. And if, let's say, they were prepared to do it without them, then they're not always going to do it.
But once they're using them, then they need them.
Well, it's not making it happen. Okay? It would have loaned it anyway. And they would have done it anyway.
You wouldn't have done it without a guarantor, and the guarantor comes forward and they say, hey, I'll help you out, not a problem.
So then that's different.
Now he's stumbling block before the blind and Lord Tassimun.
But if he would have lent it anyway, and he would have done that anyway, he was gonna do it anyway.
He only gets one.
And now whatever, they brought him in to help along, but it was happening anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's only by them coming along is the whole environment of the lending and interest happens. But that's not always the case. Or anyone who's a middleman who just brings the two together, or you help one of the guys, or you instruct them, give them advice, over mishum, then you will transgress, because then the loan's already happening. You're just helping them out with the loan, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Now, next question becomes, do you get lashed for these lavim? So the Rambam says, Gimel, af al pi shamalva valova ermal kol elavim, even though the bar lender transgress all these lavim, ain't lokin alav. You don't get lashed for it. Very simple reason. Mimnei shenita and lehishavam. You can always collect back the interest and undo the damage. And that's what the pasuk says. After it says you can't lend with interest, it says v'chai ochicha imoch. Your brother should live with you, and that means you give back the extra interest so your brother can live with you. You don't do it. If you did, so therefore it's a lav that can be fixed up, that can be repaired. Now the Rambam, he's only talking about the borrower and the lender. Doesn't seem to be talking about the witnesses, the guarantor, the sover. Doesn't say if they get lashed or not. But since the Rambam doesn't mention it, but those who get lashed, it appears that they don't get lashed. And the Chinuch says the reason is because the truth of the matter is even the borrower and the lender don't get lashed, so how could they get lashed?
Well, once the loan gets canceled.
If the
two principals don't get lashed, how could the assistants get lashed for that?
But, I mean, doesn't it make sense? So once that loan gets reversed, then they did nothing.
It always will be. That's right. So it goes without saying, in other words.
But if they can't find the borrower, the lender.
So let's just wait, please. Shekol ha-malva barivis, because somebody who lends with interest. Now, we're going to see there's two different types of interest. There's interest ribis ketsutza, a fixed interest, and one that's not fixed. The one that's not fixed, around we'll talk about the 6 chapters, so don't ask me any questions on it. Fixed means at the time of the loan. At the time of the loan, you say, I'm lending $100 at 4% interest, write it in the document. That's ketsutza. It's cut. It's fixed. from the beginning. That's the biblical transgression of interest. There's other rabbinic types. It could be he didn't lend him on interest, but then things happen subsequent to the loan in which interest comes in, where the guy, I need a little bit more time, well, it's going to cost a little bit of money, things that was all will be discussed in the sixth chapter.
Okay.
But there's interest that's from the get-go put into that, that's fixed, ketsutza, and there's things that happen afterwards. So anyway, so let's look at the situation. If it was a fixed interest, shehi asur min haTorah, that's already biblically prohibited. Okay. So now, harezu yotzeh, that goes out, the court collects the money, and it's assessed as a knas against the malva. In other words, the guy said, I'm gonna take interest, right up front, 4% interest in a year, the year's up, the guy gave him $104, right? Bezdin finds out about it, they take him by the throat and say, you give the $4 back to that guy. Finished. So, and what is this? It's not a repayment. Because he didn't really steal anything. It's a knas. It's a fine. And it's very important. You'll see in a minute why this makes a difference. Now, umotzino so mina malva. And you take it away from the lender against his will. Umachshino love, you give back to the borrower. That's why you don't get lashes for this. Because even if you took it, you didn't actually, it could all be fixed up, just like theft can be fixed up. Now, the mesa malva, and what if the malva dies?
The lender dies.
The lender dies, and now the kids inherited the $104, but since it's only a fine against the father, and guess what? We can't lash him after he's dead. You could say, well, we can't fix it up anymore. It's because he's dead. I guess we'll have to lash him now that he's dead. We've learned that. You don't lash a guy who's dead. That doesn't accomplish anything. So now the question is, what do we do with the $4? But since it's only a fine and the kids didn't do anything wrong, ein motzi'in miyada banim, we don't take it away from the children because the Torah did not give the requirement to return except to the lender who he's warned for that, and the children were not warned for that. What we do with ribbis that's rabbinic, that's going to be a discussion for another time. Yes, sir.
The borrower disappears, doesn't pay it back.
We can't lash him.
No, why can't we? No, we can't lash the lender because he hasn't.
The bezel will take the $4 from it, and they'll hold it for the borrower.
They'll hold it.
Right?
There's always
they'll take it away, and we'll hold it in escrow account for the borrower. Right?
$4 is fine.
No. It's not. Taking the $4 away from him is the fine.
Right. So, is that the same as repairing what he did?
Yeah, certainly.
Repairing what he did, he gave it to the tshuva.
We're going to talk about tshuva.
He didn't really do it.
Well, we forced him to give it back. What do we care? At the end of the day, does he have the $4?
No.
A ganef, we force him to give the money back, yeah? Do we lash him? No, because the money's back. Whatever you try to do got undone, and there's a net zero effect of what you did, right? At the end of the day, you don't have the $4.
There's no black mark against him for not having done proper tshuva? He doesn't even get the benefit?
That's another story. Lashes is one thing, tshuva is another. At the end of the day, does he have the $4? Let's say the Russia says, I'm unrepentant, I hate the guy, I wish I could keep it, but you caught me and you're taking the money away from me. We're not going to lash you, you're still not a good guy, and in Hashem's books, you're going to have to deal with Hashem. But in terms of lashes, if you can undo the effect of the action, we don't lash the guy. Once we've undone the effect, he's not lashed. Okay. Shkoyach.
Are we doing today's
Devana? That'd be a nice thing to do.
Well, Martin isn't. Well.